CliffCentral.com. All right, it is the first day of October.
Is it?
Yes, it is. You didn't know that, Ben?
The 10th month, Gareth.
I know. Are you surprised?
Yeah.
Because you love calendrical things.
Amazing how it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, for a lot of people, the first day of a new month and an opportunity to do things differently. For a lot of other people, you know, it's the downhill towards December. Driving into work this morning, sun. I know that sounds stupid because you'd expect that, but we've been waking up all of winter doing the show and you come in and it's dark.
Well, let's be honest, we can't really call it sun, we can call it light. There weren't sun rays hitting our skin yet.
It was light.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Ben said that we'd enjoy this, so here's something from Ben. All right.
Women have told everyone to just fuck off. Tired of being judged for choosing to have children or not have children, to have children and go back to work, to have children and not go back to work, for being too thin, too fat, too pushy, too unambitious, too hot, not hot enough, or even for just daring to be alive, women have stressed that everyone can go fuck themselves.
All right. That's beautiful.
Nathan Muir has been gauging the reaction because apparently a man is the best person to report this story.
If you have a vagina, people have the right to judge you on every single thing you do, even what you do with your vagina. Or so it has been up until now. I spoke to one of womankind, or the clitorati, as no one is calling them, about their backlash.
Enough's enough. The message is clear, and the message is, you're right, we will do as you command. Just kidding, it's fuck off.
That's all from me.
Oh, that's great. Isn't that terrific? What a way to start the day.
That's really good.
There we go, ladies, in case you were feeling that way, now you have solidarity from all over the place. Okay, couple of things that are worth commenting on this morning. First of all, I don't know how much you know about this story, but I got into a conversation about this yesterday, too, with somebody. Hideous story about this this kid that was raped in the Dros in Pretoria somewhere. And the reason I got into the conversation was because this person thought it was fake news. Uh-huh. It's very much not fake news. It's a hideous story. Apparently, this man, how old is this guy?
He's in his 21. Early 20s.
21?
Oh, my God. 21 years old. And he raped a girl who's six, right?
Seven.
Oh. Turns out he also is engaged to a 19-year-old.
Who's pregnant, yeah.
Who's pregnant. What a messed up, disastrous, ugly, nasty, shit situation this is.
And I don't think it was a planned thing. It just happened.
It was like he saw a six-year-old and he decided, what is going on here?
What do you mean by that, Leanne?
It wasn't a premeditated him following her around for a while or...
Apparently it was. Apparently the CCTV footage has come out that he tried to go to the toilet once before.
No, but I mean like weeks in advance. It just happened on the day. Spur of the moment.
Yeah, on that day, but still hideous. Like, what kind of thing is going on there?
But that's why with these things, and up until we get clear reporting on this, we never know what to take as truth. Because also one of the things that I read was that he very often frequents this restaurant. And he will hover about and never really sit with, you know, his family at the restaurant. But he's always just around. And people now are speaking about the fact that he's always there, but they never really know what he's doing there or who he's with. So, this just could be his thing. But as more like screenshots and people come out and comment on this, we now know that he matriculated a couple of years ago. And in that stretch of time, he offered himself to... his services to work with kids in like a manual or pair situation.
Yeah, his grandparents like run a babysitting business.
And you now start to think, well, what were you doing with those kids of this?
I mean, a lot of people who go into those professions because they can be near kids. We've discussed this a couple of times. You know, the scout Cub Scouts, the Boy Scouts, whatever it is. And I'm by no means in saying that they are, you know, full of rotten pedophiles. There's no way I'd want to make that assertion. But teachers, priests, you know, there are a lot of professions and careers that people go into because they want to deal with children. Some people for good reasons, other people for evil ones.
Mm.
He's also got like this background of going in and out of Christianity.
Oy.
Like at one stage he became a Christian.
Yeah. He said there's a red flag there.
He said he'd found the Lord, but then he would land up back in a fight. Or one heard stories about drugs again.
Nola, what did you want to say?
I was disturbed by a screenshot that I saw from someone who refused to be referred to as his friend, just someone he went to school with.
Yeah.
This guy is alleging that it's not the first time he's done something like this. He did it to a friend of his, and my question is, if that's the case and this is a known thing, why wasn't anything done about it?
Yeah, why do people not? I mean, if you knew someone was behaving like this, you'd hand them over, right? You'd tell the police. You do something.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. When it's such a creepy person, you do have fear for your own safety,
maybe. But, I mean, God, to have him going out there and doing this to more kids is just horrible. But apparently the story is that you mustn't share these videos or these screenshots. It could jeopardize the case. So, you know, if you get this, and I mean, I don't know who would want to watch this. It's like those animal abuse videos on Facebook, and I can't handle that stuff. I just can't watch it. So I didn't look at any of it. I can't see it. It'll bother me for weeks.
I was speaking to a friend of mine who works in forensics and is able to, you know, deals with things like these quite often. And she was the one who broke this down to me. Because I, as well, I heard reports and people were saying, don't share his name or his alleged name or his background or the video. And I didn't understand why. But my friend told me that, you know, the court could throw this case out based on how much is circulated about this person that is alleged to be the rapist. Mm-hmm. Because everyone, in the eyes of the law, has the right to privacy.
Yeah.
And so if we don't adhere to that and protect his identity, whether he did it or not, we don't know because he hasn't pled yet and he hasn't had his time in court, then it could be thrown out. Mm-hmm. So really, if you do want to make a difference, if you do think that this guy did it and you want to see him suffer or just get his time in court, you should not share anything that pertains to the identity that is being circulated currently on social media, because whether we now know that he's engaged or which school he went to or where he lives, and this is how social media and mob groups work now. There was a cell phone number that I saw circulated about this guy or an image. Oof. None of this could jeopardize
people. Have got to stop with this this idea of social justice where you can take someone's details and share them online and then, you know, get the community to exact their own revenge. This is not acceptable in a civilized world. You have to let the police and the courts do their business. You are not a police officer. You are not a judge. You are not in any way capable of executing justice properly. And this is not RoboCop either. So stop trying to be the savior of the world. If you want to help, help by, you know, making sure that people in your own environment are good people and not doing this to children.
Or just reporting people that you know that are doing things like this.
Right.
We just have to trust the law in this case.
Yeah.
But the second thing that my friend raised as well is using his story, this dross rapist, and also looking at the Parktown Boys water polo coach situation. She said that the profile of these two young boys is very uncommon. When you look at the profile of a pedophile, it is usually someone older.
That's what we were talking about,
who's
remember?
Who's been battling this feeling for years.
And who's probably a victim of abuse themselves. These guys, we don't know about these guys'
backgrounds. It's very rare to have a young person as a pedophile. And more than that, looking at studies that have been done, it is more likely that a pedophile will commit suicide first. before they act on their feelings. Mm-hmm. So it's a double whammy to have firstly a young pedophile and secondly someone who doesn't inflict harm on themselves, but rather went out and acts on their feelings. It makes this case even more odd. And so they're saying they're very interested to see what will come out of more investigation on people like this.
If we didn't need any more dodgy things in this country, we now have anomalies in pedophilia. I mean,
yeah, it's horrible.
But I mean, can we just stop being so precious about this? Go back to the tried and tested protocol. Interview the dad, interview the uncle. You'll get a very sort of clear thread here. Because you look at the story, this kid lived with his grandparents. Where's the father in this?
Uh-huh.
Go to that.
There's always something.
You say an uncommon thread, I'm pretty sure you'll find a common thread if you actually just take those steps. Pretty basic.
Well,
go to the source.
That's what we know for now.
Yeah, I'm just actually thankful that the child is still alive. They're saying that the family and the child are in therapy. One of the therapists who dealt with the little girl says that she's certain the girl will need lifelong treatment after this.
That's just it. It's like you're ruining someone's life.
But the therapist was saying that this alleged rapist could have, in a split second, killed the girl. Because given his behavior, and if you've watched the video, the alleged video, let's use this, you can see his behavior is very aggressive and it's manic. And in a moment, if he heard a bang on the door, he doesn't think rationally of thinking, okay, let me surrender, I'll apologize.
No, he's a dangerous human
being. He's a person who could have easily said, how do I rectify the situation? Let me strangle her. Call it a day.
God.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, there's a thrilling, lovely, happy story for you for a Monday. I mean, we can't ignore the news, but there it is.
Yeah.
Apparently, Leanne tells me that there's a new dinosaur.
Yes.
Ah,
it was found in South Africa by a team comprising UCT academics. And it's not just any dinosaur. It's a giant dinosaur species.
How giant?
Those are the best.
How giant?
Double the size of a large elephant.
No.
Giant.
That's medium dinosaur.
You think so?
It was the largest of its kind living on the earth during its time.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you think about common dinosaurs, dinosaur names, what do you think of?
Tyrannosaurus, Brontosaurus, Brachiosaurus.
Well, this one's been named Leduma Hadi Mafube.
Oh, Gosiam.
Wow.
Which means gusho guti.
What
does it mean?
Let's just get it one more time. What's the name?
Leduma Hadi Mafube. It's a Sotho for a giant thunderclap at dawn.
You know, South Africa.
Very North American Indian.
Smoking goof on the weekend.
I can't wait for European scientists somewhere to have to announce this.
Say that again.
Where is it now? Leduma Hadi Mafube.
Leduma Hadi
Mafube. The plant-eating dinosaur named Leduma Hadi Mafube weighed 12 tons and stood about 4 meters high at the hips.
Jeez.
This plant-eating dinosaur was the largest land animal alive on Earth when it lived, nearly 200 million years ago.
Hmm.
It was found near Clarence in the Free State.
Wow, okay.
Apparently when it lived, South Africa looked a lot more like Musina in Limpopo, or like a bit of the Karoo, the central Karoo.
All right.
And so Clarence looks a bit different to that now. It's, scenic and mountainous. But it used to be flat, semi-arid landscape and shallow, intermittent dry beds. So the Minister of Science and Technology has said that this discovery underscores how important South African paleontology is to the world. I mean, we have the cradle of humankind already.
Now we have the cradle of dinosaur kind.
Yes.
Clarence Park.
So, Leduma Hadi is closely related to other gigantic dinosaurs from Argentina that lived at a certain time.
Yeah.
And they're the closest relatives of the sauropod dinosaurs.
Okay. That makes sense then.
Which includes the Brontosaurus.
Yes.
All right, this is pretty great. Fascinating.
Huh. Nice. A new dinosaur. Isn't that good news?
Oh, Ledu.
Oh, Ledu.
Ledu, is that what we're calling him?
What's the definition? The thunderclap that's polite.
At dawn.
A giant thunderclap at dawn.
Yes.
So, huge flatulence then. Imagine being around there.
Bah!
Oh, there it is.
What's his name again?
Ledu Mahadi.
Ledu Mahadi after a good feed.
Right, exactly. That's the sound that he made, apparently.
And then in the morning.
And then there was the thunderclap at dawn.
Thundercrap.
All right, cabinet ministers.
Yes.
Where do they stay? Well, they stay in free government housing, don't they?
Very nice government housing.
Yeah, because if you are a minister, you get a house in Pretoria and a house in Cape Town because you're so busy and you're so important. And we need to have you in both cities, well accommodated and looked after like gold.
But they must pay. They don't get it for free.
Oh?
So cabinet ministers can now rent a really lavishly renovated multi-million rand apartment in Cape Town in this particular building.
Yes.
For 1,200 rand. The building is, the apartment is worth 4 million.
But you can get it for how much?
1,200 rand.
Oh, casual.
So a block.
Someone's doing bad things with zeros there.
Yeah. They zoomified it. So a block of 29 flats was handed over by builders this month. It had 100 million rands worth of renovations over 2 years in the suburb of Rosebank in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
It'll house ministers, deputies and senior officials. Directors general are set to pay just 75 rand a month in rent.
Is that it? Wow.
800 and 700.
Cheap as chips.
Properly.
Yes.
Yeah.
769,000.
Right.
820.
Oh. Spelel.
Spelel. And 70.
Oh, it's 70.
Okay, so.
So let's just round it down to 1,200 bucks.
Yeah.
That's how we negotiate. If we're in government, that's that. You just heard a proper government negotiation going on.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it's a really nice place at a very cheap rate.
Very nice place. I mean, okay, so think about your income versus how much you spend on rent or bond.
Yeah, of course.
Ministers earn 200,000 rand a month and they're paying 1,200 rand.
Yes, that doesn't seem right.
JPTs earning 165,000 rand will be charged 988.90 rand.
Oh, wow.
And directors general 75 rand.
Just 75 rand.
You know, that's not even a glass of wine.
Why do you feel that the poor people and the people who work the hardest get punished the most, and these guys who are earning big salaries for doing they talk. They get up and they talk and they attend breakfasts.
Does it make you want to do it?
No, I don't want to be a minister. It's a horrible job. But it pays well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are clearly perks.
Well, political economy analyst Zamikaya Masete said government infrastructure, such as this area or this building, should be expropriated without compensation and converted into affordable rentals for young people.
Absolutely. I mean, that's quite near to the university. It should be put to better use. Yeah, I don't think we need to be paying anything more than the absolute minimum for all of this. All right, we got Barry on Skype. Hey, Barry, what's up, dude?
Hey, King. Good evening.
What do you got? You got a lot of background noise there, dude.
There's a lot of echo.
Yeah.
I'm phoning from the car phone.
Oh, okay. All right, well, what do you want to say? Go ahead.
Now I want to talk about that show you guys did, the high show on Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite difficult to listen to, especially here at the end when you guys got completely messed up.
You have no idea how difficult it was for us. I was trying to hold it together. It was a disaster.
Yeah, that's something that I think, you know, needs to be said about the whole thing of using cannabis.
Mm.
I don't know who the guys were that brought you guys the weed in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
They stand. I only got the last hour or so where they mentioned they were functional stoners and that type of thing. But one thing that irked me a bit about them was that they gave you guys edibles instead of, you know, suggesting that you guys vape it or that type of thing.
Yeah, I will never do it again. It was a great ad for not doing weed. And if we achieved anything on Friday, it was to let any people who think it might be cool know that it's a disaster zone. You want to stay out of there. Just don't do it.
So, you know, from my perspective, I'd love for you guys to try it again, but if I might make a suggestion, and that's for anybody else listening who's considering trying it and maybe got put off, you know, maybe try it with somebody that's got your best interests at heart as well.
Well, yes. You know? I mean, look, there are a number of lessons that have been, you know, available to us post that experience on Friday, and I agree with you. There are probably responsible ways you could do it in the right environment with the right people. I don't know. I'm just not keen.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to there's a comedy show that Joe Rogan did on Netflix. I think it's called Trigger or something, where he starts off his show by talking about how strong and, you know, edibles are. And one of the things he mentions is that if you eat dacha or cannabis, the psychoactive effect is something between 3 and 5 times as strong or stronger than when you smoke it or vape it.
Wow.
So I don't know if you guys knew this when you started eating it and smoking it on Friday. I think the guys who smoked it and ate it were probably blitzed out of their minds. Well, they were way off than anybody else.
That was Ben and Nolo. They were ruined.
Yeah. Ruined. So if you try doing this, maybe do it offline first and get somebody to give you a dry vaporizer pen and take a little bit. Because the effect when you vaporize or smoke it is almost instantaneous. If it takes 10 minutes to get its full effect, or let's say 15 minutes for the full effect, then that's a lot.
I think we're done on that one, really.
Yeah, we're quite online people. We don't do very sensible things. We'd rather try it.
Barry, you still there? I think we've lost him. Damn. Yeah, I think we've, you know, lessons learned. We've done it.
Sure. I made a mistake, and I apologize for it.
Yep. I am sorry.
I don't know about you. I don't want to try it in any other way. I don't need to do it again. Done. That was too much for me when I was looking at Ben lying on the floor.
On the carpet. Even say I was lying on the floor. It was just I was melted onto the floor.
Just was not worth it at all. And I called all of you on Friday night just to check up on them and how they're doing. Gareth was fine. Ben was just still groggy and mumbling through the phone call conversation. I speak to Nolo and she was out of it still. This is like 6 p.m. She was still out of it. So lesson learned. Let's not go back down that road. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Barry. Nice to hear from you and appreciate the feedback as always. So how do you create a moment you will remember for life?
Well, this is the whole thing. Do these moments that you sit back and look at when you're 85, were they created by you or did they just happen?
I read some really interesting stuff once about how most of your memories are actually made up. And most of them don't even follow what actually happened.
Exactly. So that point exactly. So think about...
This is why eyewitness testimony is such a problem, because the more time you have between when something happened and when you have to tell the story, the more messed up that story becomes. And it's like broken telephone eventually.
Your brain filters stuff out.
Right. And this is why you can't actually, if someone says, I was there, I saw this, they don't actually have any way to, unless you've got video footage, pictures, or some kind of documentary evidence, it's very hard to make it stick.
So there's a thought experiment called the Disney Paradox. So for the majority of your moments at an amusement park, you would have probably been happier sitting on your couch at home, because parks are a pain. There are long lines, it's hot, everything's expensive, there are crowds everywhere. But 6 months later, you look back and you're like, you know, that trip to Disney was one of the highlights of my year. And how can something that wasn't that great at that moment become your greatest life experience?
Well, how does it happen?
Well, it's called the peak end principle, which says that when we remember our experiences, what we remember are moments. So if you think about a holiday you took or a project at work from a couple of years ago that you did really well in, you don't remember the whole experience from start to finish. Right. You just remember these certain scenes or certain moments, which actually become disproportionate, remembering the good and forgetting the bad. So these moments tended to be called the peak, which is the most positive part of the experience. So you remember the adrenaline rush after the roller coaster.
Okay.
Or when Goofy came over to your son, whatever.
Hey, what are you doing, kid? Goofy, get away from my children, Goofy.
All the sweatiness and irritability kind of fades out.
Yeah. Well, so it's like also people will tell you, oh, you know, it was such a big thing for me to climb Kilimanjaro.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, but what an awful experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is. It's like, there's nothing nice about climbing Kilimanjaro. It's, first of all, quite dangerous. Second of all, it's very unpleasant. It's cold. You can't breathe properly. You're physically exhausted. And then they get down and they say, it was the greatest thing I've ever done. And I never understood that. But it turns out that because of that peak, and in this case it's ironic because I'm talking about a peak,
mm-hmm.
people come off of that experience and they go, that was amazing.
Yeah.
They love it. 99% of it was...
And then people who do it after them go, I don't know what they were talking about. Mm. I'm dying here.
But 99% of it is a terrible experience. But you remember that one moment where at the top of the mountain and you plant your flag or you take your picture next to the sign or whatever it is and you feel this enormous sense of accomplishment. And suddenly the 99% of horrible stuff evaporates. It's amazing.
There is an acronym for this defining moment formula called EPIC.
Mm-hmm.
So the first is...
Bloody mountain bikers, you're right. They're always crapping on about that race.
Yeah, there you go.
The Cape EPIC, yeah?
The first is elevation. Mm-hmm. These are moments that lift us up above the everyday, so they spark positive emotions like joy, delight, and engagement. Think of birthday parties, athletic mm-hmm. competitions, cocktails with friends at sunset. Well, the latter wouldn't be that exciting for me.
Elevate, yeah.
That's elevation. The second is pride. These moments capture us at our best.
Mm.
So everybody has a stash of personal mementos from life, things that would be valueless to everybody else, but to you, they're priceless, things that you just can't bear to throw away. There may be certificates or awards or plaques or nice letters from somebody saying that you did well at something.
Mm-hmm.
The third is insight. These are moments that rewire our understanding of ourselves or our world. Think of epiphanies and realizations and aha moments.
Huh.
And then finally, these memorable moments tend to be moments of connection, moments that tie us to other people. So they're things that,
so sick.
Yeah, the things that you experience in a personal relationship or in groups of people where you are bonded together because of it.
Hmm.
So it is actually possible to create an epic moment by following these steps. So by looking in your diary and saying, let me set a date to go and see the Northern Lights.
Yeah.
I've been threatening to for so long. Let me do it with a friend. And, you know, you may remember, you won't remember, you'll experience the stresses of traveling and organizing this trip and arranging pet sitters and all of that sort of thing. But there'll be that one moment.
So make your life epic is what they're trying to tell you.
Hmm.
That's pretty amazing. I like that. And we must create these moments. Otherwise, what the hell else are you going to remember?
Yeah.
Coffee at the machine in the morning?
Exactly. Put in some forethought and some investment.
Planet, you lazy backside. Yes, what's up, Nola?
This is such an odd thing for me, but... my general outlook on life is just that.
Make epic moments.
Yeah, I'll be going through the roughest time and I'll be excited to see how it's going to pan out and just how much it can, you know, take. And I think it draws from my name, Noloiso, being a victress. It's not that I'm not acknowledging what's happening. It's mm-hmm. it's that I know it's going to have an amazing ending. That's just
so you can then get through the terrible times by having something to look forward to.
Yep.
I like that. I think that's very healthy. I don't know how that could be bad for you.
But also, we must never forget the most epic moment is right now that we're actually alive today.
Preach. Listen to this.
Life is tough as fuck.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, it is.
I thought I was going to die on Friday. We could have all died on the weekend.
Oh, hey, buddy.
We live in a violent place.
Mm.
It's a tough world.
Well, someone once said to me,
that I'm here right now.
Just imagine for a minute. How many factors have to perfectly coincide and align? How many people throughout history had to meet up and mate to make you? The fact that you exist at all, in an evolutionary science term, it's bizarre. If you look at the timeline of how much had to happen for you to end up here, I mean, you have got the slightest, faintest possibility of even coming into existence in a universe of all kinds of probabilities. The fact that you are alive and you're here means all of those troubles that you think you have are nothing. Do you know how many non-existent Sias, Nolos, Bens, Leans, Mees, Yous there are that didn't come into existence?
Yeah.
I mean, you just think about the fact that that one little sperm that made it to the egg is the reason you're here and not someone else. And that's in your own lifetime. It's incredible to think. The chances of life existing at all are infinitely small. And I mean, that's why you've got to make these moments count, because that's all you got.
It's similar to one of the...
What do you got at the end? When you die, we don't want to get too philosophical and depressing, or you're too cerebral this morning. But when you die, what have you got?
Exactly.
In those last few minutes before you disappear into the ground, or you close your eyes and don't wake up, what do you got? Some memories? You can't take the material stuff with you. You've got memories and relationships. And in that moment, you want to fill those last few seconds that you have with great memories. I mean, obviously, it would help if you're, you know...
If you have a memory.
Yeah. If you actually don't have Alzheimer's, oh, which would make it very hard. But, I mean, that's what you got, right? That's what you got. See, I actually just went and knocked on some wood.
Yeah, don't play around with that. I need to.
He knocked on about four surfaces before he...
That's right.
I'd like to look for something. Right. I don't want to play around with...
Yes, we've got a call, caller. Yes, sir, go ahead.
I pledge to be a better man tomorrow.
Okay.
And will never, ever let you down.
Thank you. That's very nice of you, sir. Thank you. That's Donald out of East London.
You know, who turns 90 this year?
Who?
Mickey Mouse.
Oh, M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S. Yes, I heard about that.
I see there's an exhibition in Sandton City.
I saw it
through the glass lift.
So around the world, there's going to be these Mickey Mouse statues that will be created in each country. You know, Gareth, like the bears you saw in Germany, like I saw in Brazil.
Yes.
There's going to be Mickey Mouses that are going to be inspired by local countries. There'll be a whole roadshow around Mickey's 90th birthday. Big
Mickey. My grandfather lived to 100 and he would be 103 this month. He died 2 months ago, 3 months ago. So he was actually older than Mickey Mouse. I thought Mickey Mouse would be... older than my grandfather.
Wow. Yeah, Mickey Mouse is 90. This is his first appearance. Steamboat Willie.
Oh.
That's right. That was Mickey's first proper appearance on television.
And his first words were...
Oh, boy!
Hot dogs.
Oh.
Hot dogs?
Really? Let's see if he says anything in Steamboat Willie.
He was a bit of a whistler in the beginning, was Mickey. So that was 1928. So Walt Disney actually created him, along with a guy called Ib Iwerks.
Who?
Mortimer Mouse, meant to be the first name.
Mortimer, yeah.
Yeah, but the wife, Walt's wife, Lillian, said, no, we call him Mickey.
Hmm.
And yes, Mickey and Minnie Mouse were actually married, physically married.
Yeah.
Mickey goes, like Bert and Ernie.
No. They were just lovers and friends. Or nothing at all.
I saw someone the other day with one of those Mickey Mouse watches.
Goodness me.
Really cheap.
Yeah, those
adult
things. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's very proud of it. And I don't know if you find them easily anymore, but they used to be quite a thing. There used to be a lot of them around. This is the first one I've seen in 30 years. It's very cool.
How many fingers did Mickey Mouse have?
Four.
I think he has like four, three or four.
Yeah, he's got
three fingers and a thumb.
Well done, sir. You're a real hand guy, aren't you?
Okay, Ben. We aren't going to do this when we're talking about Mickey Mouse.
Oh, you're just observant about people's hands.
Very good. Yeah.
How many, Ben?
Mickey has three fingers and a thumb.
See, that's right.
The Mickey Mouse Club. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, I loved it.
Watched that, of course. Yeah.
This portion of your Mickey Mouse Club is brought to you by your friendly neighbor who bottles Coca-Cola.
All
right.
Come on, Mickey's
Mickey
a legend.
Mouse presents the Mickey Mouse Club, brought to you by the ABC Television Network, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday.
This was to keep kids entertained at home, stop them from breaking down the house. That's all it was. See, I still sings this every morning.
You say that though, and I don't know.
M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E.
Hey there, hi there, ho there, do
the welcome as can be.
M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E.
Mickey Mouse.
Wah, wah, wah. Mickey Mouse. Wah, wah, wah. Forever let us hold our banner high, 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 high. Come along and sing the song and join the jamboree.
M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E.
Mickey Mouse Club.
It's quite repetitive, but you know, they get the
it did the
basic
job
thing. Yeah, sure.
I don't even know why I was asking about the adult who owns a Mickey Mouse watch, because I was thinking about it in my own head. Going to Disneyland a few months ago, I bought a Mickey Mouse bowl. So yeah. I have my cereal out of that. It's embarrassing to say out loud. And then I also have a Mickey Mouse blanket as well.
Is there any other stuff you want to admit? What underwear are you going on? See, I have Mickey Mouse underwear.
No. Yeah. But it's just such a staple in society, going to Disneyland. And you're talking about the memories earlier. Hands down, one of the top five best experiences I've ever had. There's something about being in that world and everyone's running around and you're eating the Mickey Mouse waffles and there's this sweet smell in the air. Then they do the street parade and of course you now want to go and hug Goofy and you don't think about the fact that it's
you are a prime candidate
ill-shaven
for
38-year-old man.
That,
in the
witch, that witch in Hansel and Gretel would have been clapping her hands for you to come down that path at this point.
Oh, I put him in the oven.
That's Mickey Mouse.
Do you want a Mickey Mouse waffle?
That's all you need to do, right. And then you'll kidnap me. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Dangerous. So, yeah, the Mickey Mouse. But, I mean, who doesn't have some kind of Mickey Mouse thing? Who didn't
First iconic. It was created. Like, Walt Disney was a genius. Sure. It was the first iconic character in the animated world.
Absolutely. And now Disney has swollen to be this enormous and powerful company that pretty much controls the movie industry.
Yeah.
They own Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Mickey runs it with an iron fist.
Mickey is
the
boss.
He's found his way to the top.
He's very hardcore.
I mean, he had that fellow. I mean, kids used to stare at sticks, and then Mickey Mouse came along. So you know he was always going to be a huge hit.
Wow.
We've actually got Mickey on the line right now to wish him a happy birthday. Ben, you can tell him happy birthday. Mickey, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Good, Mickey. Are you excited about your birthday coming up?
Boy, I can't wait. I love birthdays. I'm 90 years old, and I'm still a spring chicken.
Mickey, I don't mean to be morbid about this, but are you the oldest in your family? Has anyone reached this milestone before?
No, I was created by Walt. He's dead. So I'm the oldest. Hooray! Hey, kids, do you want to know how old I am?
Yeah.
Let's count.
I'm older than your granddad. And your grandma, put together. Ha! I've been around since before the First World War.
Obviously not a lot of made about this, but what's the age gap between you and Minnie?
I don't talk about her anymore. We had a divorce in the 1980s, and I had an affair with Daffy Duck's wife, Denise.
Daffy Duck has a wife?
Yes.
So
I mean, Donald. I mean, Ivanka. Who can keep track?
Do you have special celebrations, like just intimate celebrations, or are you going to be touring the world for your 90th?
We have a special club at Disney World that only members are allowed into. Did you know about that?
I heard about it in the Bill Cosby trial recently.
Yeah, I'm the only guy who hands out keys, and, well, we took away Bill's, but other people have it, and we have special parties in there with booze.
Wow.
You didn't know I like booze, but I try to hide that from the kids.
Is that why in Steamboat Willie you didn't say anything, because you're a bit drunk?
What kind of a question is that? Go to hell, all of you. Go to hell.
All right, thank you, Mickey. Wow.
Don't upset Mr. Mouse.
Vicious.
Wow.
That's a side of Mickey you don't often see.
He's a 90-year-old, like...
He runs the Disney company. He's got his own office, and he's hardcore.
Apparently he beat George Lucas up in a fist fight.
I bet you he did.
Walt Disney only lived up to 65.
Yeah, and he went and he had himself cryogenically frozen. Well, that's the legend. I mean, some people say it's nonsense and he was just buried in the ground.
By Mickey? Did Mickey freeze him?
Well, you never know.
No, Mickey runs the empire.
He was famously one of the people who wanted to be cryogenically frozen, so that one day when they had discovered a way of reanimating a dead person, he would be thawed out and suddenly come back to life.
Oh,
of course, it hasn't happened. I think they just eventually, you know, they just put him in the ground like they do with most people. But that was Walt Disney. That was his last wish, was to be frozen.
But there's something to be said about achieving so much at 65.
Oh, hell. The guy was...
But he struggled, definitely.
He was a genius. And his brother Roy Disney was in charge of the company for a long time after that. I think Roy Disney only died somewhere in the 90s.
Yeah, because Walt Disney's wife only died in 97.
Yeah. I mean, what an interesting... Like, what a great life. You've left behind this character that ends up being a multimedia... Like a mega corporate monstrosity, but you start off with just a little cartoon of a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
And it becomes the most recognized little cartoon icon in the world.
I mean, don't let anybody tell you can't change the world. This guy picked up a pen, drew a cartoon, and look at the world he's left. It's incredible. That's one man. He didn't have, big money behind him. He didn't have connections. When Walt Disney started, he was just a cartoonist. He's just a dude. And then suddenly he's got this whole world. He creates, theme parks. Well, I mean, all of this spun out of the cartoons. But you've got theme parks. You've got cruise ships. You've got kids all over the world buying merchandise. Mm. Eventually you buy up all the other companies. You create these new... I mean, there are kids that are obsessed with the world of, like, the cartoon Frozen, right? Mm-hmm. That show, that movie. Yes. They're obsessed with it. There are little girls who dress like that. They want to be that princess. They live, eat, breathe, sleep this stuff. Imagine having that kind of effect on the world. And making the world that... I mean, you create these universes inside people's heads. It's phenomenal.
Shucks.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for this guy, this Walt Disney. What a good dude.
I haven't watched the movie yet. I'd love to.
Yeah.
Stars Tom Hanks and depicting him.
Tom Hanks is playing
Walt Disney. Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, it'd be worth checking out, I'm sure. What else is going on?
Well, I just have this to bring up. Did you hear about the massive hack? From the Facebook hack.
Did you also have to log back in?
Yes.
Yeah, I did.
Me too. I think they got our details. That's why we had to log back in.
The scariest part is the phone number.
I think we've got to get off of Facebook. I'm serious. I don't know if we need to be there anymore. I'm starting to think that, the first thing was this Cambridge Analytica thing in America, which obviously influenced the elections. You saw Mark Zuckerberg said he has no way to control it. He didn't know what was going on.
He was hacked himself. Did you know that?
Right.
He, Sheryl Sandberg, who's Facebook's chief operating officer, and then one of their vice presidents from Europe were also hacked.
Apparently the back door that they found into everybody's information. You can view your profile as if you were someone else. So you could see what your profile looks like.
Yeah.
To everybody else on the internet.
Okay.
Yeah, because to you it looks a bit different because you've got all of the tabs which allow you to create something.
Correct.
So that gets removed and it looks like how if you were visiting someone else's page.
Yeah. Like you're looking at somebody else's. So they found some back door in there and this is how the hack happened. And it's compromised a whole lot of your information. So look, there are two ways to live. Either you completely get off the internet or you must understand that all your personal information is going to be shared at some point, and you've got to be comfortable with that. There is no in between. It's either all or nothing. If it's nothing, get off the internet, delete everything before you go, close it all down, and never go back on the internet. And that's kind of impossible. So the only alternative is for you to be comfortable that everything about you is going to be out there in public.
Well, Gareth, there is an alternative if we go with this. Much like this whole Dr. Frankenstein story of creating something and goes out and creates a mess and he feels bad about it. Well, Tim Berners-Lee, do you know who he is?
He's the guy who started the internet.
The World Wide Web, yes. Oh. He says that he is disgusted by the monster he now calls the World Wide Web, a monster that he's unleashed on the world. Hmm. He's spent the last couple of years really feeling bad about the state of the internet and what it has been. And so he has now taken that and worked on something that he's about to launch soon. He says that he wants to create a new parallel web that will allow users to bypass the major flaws of the likes of Facebook and Amazon and Google.
Yeah.
So he's calling this new open source project Solid, and he says it's years in the making to decentralize the web by letting users choose where their data is kept, along with who can see it and who can access their data there as well.
The internet.
It's now called Solid, according to Tim.
But surely he shouldn't feel that bad, because surely someone would have created it.
He said it's a monster. That's what he called it.
A monster. Imagine he was sitting in his, you know, study years ago. He says, I want to connect the world.
Uh-huh.
Everyone will be able to communicate quicker. We'll have love and harmony in the world. Oh, no.
No help.
Humans are like, mm-mm.
No, they're going to find new ways to be mean to each other.
Yep. So Tim says Solid changes the current model where users have to hand over personal data to digital giants in exchange for perceived value.
Uh-huh.
He says, as we've all discussed, this hasn't been in our best interests. So he says, we have to do it now. It's a historical moment. We are in the Solid world.
A monster.
So let's see. He's Oxford educated. He's 63 years old right now, and he's spent the last couple of years working on Solid at MIT. Where along with another computer science professor, he's now about to launch Solid.
Hmm. All right, I don't know if I'm so excited about this.
It's his little attempt of going about making a change, because right now, a lot of people in the law industry in South Africa are now warning people who are still on WhatsApp, and specifically who are administrators of WhatsApp groups.
Yeah.
Because should anything come out, they were discussing this and using the example of the Adam video,
the Adam Katsavelos,
viral
right.
A few weeks ago, saying that if you are a WhatsApp admin, you could actually be liable for something legally. Because continuing with that analogy, he's saying if it is something and someone is offended by it and goes and lays a charge against you, technically as the admin, you are in charge of the content and what is discussed or what is posted in that group. And so you could actually face some sort of repercussion as a WhatsApp admin.
I'd be in huge trouble. I only have offensive stuff on my WhatsApp groups.
You're all guys.
I would be in huge trouble as well.
Stay away.
You know, you think stuff is funny until someone takes it out of context. Or
all it takes is one person.
Yeah, you don't know it. So, Tim Berners-Lee, too little too late, my friend. You created a Frankenstein, and now you're trying to fix it?
You blew it!
That's right.
You know, someone in India was actually arrested a little while ago for being a WhatsApp group admin.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Something.
You could be arrested for
being... I'm on so many groups.
Are you an admin, though?
I think I am on some as well. I want to just take it away today.
I think, I'm gonna nominate some other people. Yeah.
Just be safe.
I'm just going to leave them all and say, sorry, guys, new phone, can you add me?
In this group, this case in India, someone posted a meme of one of their prime ministers, and someone in that group took offense to that post and actually laid a complaint with the police. Boy. And the admin was actually charged because of the defamatory post. So now, deuces to all the groups I'm in. I don't want no responsibility in that.
See, you just told everyone your deepest, darkest secret. You must be so embarrassed.
Yes, all right, okay. All right.
Yeah. Gareth, would you mind turning the aircon down?
Oh, you're dying, Ben.
Freezing here, Jesus.
Let me turn on the aircon and Ben's...
Chattery jaw.
It's withdrawals from your Friday experience.
From Friday, yeah. Ben's still coming down. All right, Pavalo says... Le Dumahadi Mafube, what a fittingly portentous name for a dinosaur. I cannot wait for my children to make me pasta art projects of this great dinosaur. for me to display. A few years ago, the paleontologists at UCT in Wits discovered a new species of dinosaur called Cephapanosaurus. Apparently, Cephapano means cross in Sesotho. It's derived from how its ankle joints articulated together, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. Don't despair, there will be a more confounding Sesotho dinosaur name to come in the next few years. The Jurassic rock formations in the Clarence area are a paleontological trove for sauropsids and synapsids, which are the early mammals, reptiles, and birds, or just dinosaurs to you and me. Isn't that interesting?
So exciting.
See what I mean about how clever people who listen to us are? I mean, this is clearly someone who knows a lot about paleontology. Yeah. Jennifer says, I was born in 1991. I always thought, what the hell were my parents thinking when they got together? My dad was Scottish and my mom was Xhosa. Huh.
So you're Scottish.
Scottish. Scottish. Yeah, Scottish. That's right. It's amazing. Mfunda says, love your set of podcasts on man-to-man talks. Yes. If you haven't listened to that yet, you need to. Very popular series called Man-to-Man Talks. You've got to go and listen to it. It's all on cliffcentral.com. Who's on the line, Nolo? Someone on the line. Ah, Mr. Mulholland. Very good. It's time we spoke to him. We've missed him for the last couple of weeks. He's been busy and we've been busy and lots has been going on. Rich Mulholland, are you Scottish?
I wish I was.
How are you, dude?
Super Ed. How's things going over there?
Okay, not bad at all. It's a shitty line, but we're okay. What do you got in the reality check today?
Well, it's like one of these small things, but I think it affects a lot of people. And I guess it comes down to what you guys were talking about being WhatsApp admins the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So, the other minute.
Just now, yeah.
Yeah. So, one thing that bothers me, one thing that happens a lot on WhatsApp is people use it for organizing big family functions.
Yes.
So every time there's like a family function, everybody gets invited. Now, first of all, there should be a standard rule. One person per family is all that is required. But anyway, this is not really where I'm going with this thing, but it started off one of these. So I have a very big family. We have lots of gatherings, and they're often at restaurants. Mm-hmm. And at the end of those gatherings, and it's like, and often there'll be like family and then friends of family members. And so there's like 20, 30 people at this big table. And then the bill comes.
Yeah.
And when the bill comes, there's chaos. There's like lots of credit card slips. There's like loan piles of cash. There's confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And almost every time I end up sitting there trying to figure out and tally, and people get up and they pay and they leave and they walk away. And there's always those like two or three people at the end of the meal that are sitting there working on the bill only to realize you're like $500 short.
Ugh.
And then you have to pay it in. And this kills me. And I think there has to be a better system. So I want to lay down some new ground rules for big group tables.
All right.
So that this can go away. And I've got one proposed system.
Okay.
Now, the first rule is this. If it's your gig, it's your gig. If you're the one who organizes, if you start that bloody WhatsApp group in the first place, you're taking responsibility. You're the person who hands the waiter the bill and the money. So that's rule number one.
Okay.
Now, rule number two is you got to arrange this beforehand. You got to have a system. And I want to suggest a system for you. I guess this would be rule number three. So I went to this restaurant recently. It's a Mexican place in Cape Town. What they do is when you walk in, they give you little round stickers, and they ask you if you're all together, and if you are, you write a little number on the sticker. So you might be sitting at the big table, which is, you know, table 10, but you have sticker number 3 on you. And anybody in your family that orders at that time, they just order with sticker number 3.
Okay.
And then that way, when the bill is finished, when the evening is finished, all that happens is that you pay that way. So you just pay for your bill. But right. The only thing is, you have to arrange this for the restaurant beforehand if you're organizing the gig. Because otherwise you're going to arrive and everything is going to go onto one big bill.
Yeah.
And two or three poor bastards at your table are going to end up paying for everybody else. Now, I'm not saying I'm bitter, but man, I'm bitter. Because I'm always that poor bastard. And I was a waiter. I was already tipping well to start with. Now I'm tipping well and paying more. It's bullshit. It's got
to
stop.
Yeah, you know, we used to have this friend when we were at varsity together. We'd all go out as a group of friends, and she would never pay in the right amount. She would put in an absolute minimum, and then she would say she'd included a tip, but she never did. So we just eventually got to a point with her where we wouldn't include her. We would just stop inviting her because she was such a problem.
Yeah, it's crazy. We all have one of those, right?
Mm.
Everybody has that person in their family or in their extended friend group. And I guess the only thing I want to say is that you have to take control. If you're going to organize something big, if it's for somebody's birthday or for anything, I think the onus falls on you to handle all of this.
Mm.
And I believe that anybody going to one of these functions needs to ask that when you walk in the door. Who's in charge of this? Who is taking control of the money at the end? And how are we going to handle this?
I agree with you. There's also obviously a much more elegant way to do this, and that is to say, you know, if it's a group of like five of you and you go out regularly together, then I'll do tonight, you guys do next week or the week after, and then you keep it really clean.
Yeah, so with small groups like that, I mean, in fact, like lunches, if sure. you and I had a lunch and we met, I'd get this one, you'd get the next sure. one. Even that will require some degree of accounting. I quite like that systems like, I think it's Zapper more than SnapScan, but Zapper, you actually can hold up the bill and then just divide it. And it says, you know, there are 12 people here, I'm paying for three of them. Okay. And it just does the math for you. And I think that's very elegant, provided you're kind of happy that you're just divvying it up. But yes, if you're going with small groups of people and it's the same group all the time, it's no problem. It's more the big tables when it's like 10, 20, 30 plus people there that things start getting chaotic. Maybe anything over 10, I would say. But yeah. Anyway.
All right, good. We've got to have a system, basically.
You've got to have a system. There are easy systems out there. I think I'm going to write a blog post. I'm going to propose a system with a blog post. And anytime you go to a restaurant, if you're organizing, you've got to send the restaurant the system. And if they don't agree to it, find another restaurant because they're going to lose out regardless.
Yeah, so I like cool. that. I think that's an excellent idea. Let's clean this up because it's still a messy part of human interaction and we can do some tidying up. And of course, usually the person who does the adding up at the end is someone who has a good accounting skill.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's always my brother who knows that type of stuff. And it's actually a horrible part of the evening is getting the bill. It's like, oh, I've got to calculate everything now. Yeah. Is everyone going to pay?
And people bring out their calculators.
Did I bring cash? How many mm-hmm. cards is this waiter going to use? It's all awkward.
Yeah, it's very
difficult. It also took, I mean, the time I was referring to recently, it took about 30 minutes because mm-hmm. it was such a big table and that one little piece of paper had to go round group after group after group after group for everyone to pay.
Yeah.
And it's just got to be a more elegant solution. And you're absolutely right. It's a really crappy way to end a very nice afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think also the burden of some of this should fall on the restaurant. Their job is to make it easier for people to have a great time. And nothing will mar your memory of an experience quite like spending 25 minutes in accounting class as you're walking out the door, especially if you're half pissed. Now, I don't drink, so that's not me. But I think the accounting gets made a lot more difficult per tequila you've had.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Rich. Nice stuff. We'll speak to you next week.
Get soon.
Cool. There we go. Rich Mulholland, reality check on a Monday. All right. That's about it from us. We've got a couple of interesting things happening today on cliffcentral.com. And we've got a replay of our interview with Refense Murake, who is, of course, the Afrikaans singer. And this guy, he's got such an interesting life story. I mean, I remember when he came in here and we spoke to him the first time. I just thought, you know what? I love people who don't fit into the stereotype. I love people who are willing to step into individuality and not hold on to group identity. It's hard. It's really tough. Some people struggle with that their whole lives. This guy, he's a sensation in the Afrikaans music scene. And you wouldn't think it. Picked up a guitar, realized he had a talent at a young age, and he's now one of the biggest things in Afrikaans music. Who would have thought? Refense Murake. He's coming up in our replay interview just after 8 o'clock. Here is the unnews for this morning. Well, turns out Batabile Dlamini, you know, we spoke about her on Friday, she's in some financial difficulty. A recent court ruling says that she is liable for costs around the Sassa debacle, and the news is now being leaked that there isn't much in the kitty for her. There are such dire circumstances that some speculate she may need to start selling some of her single malt whiskies. Sources close to Dlamini says she would sooner die than do that. Theresa May's Brexit plans aren't going very well, no matter what she tries to say around this, or to whom, her words are going down like lead balloons. It's got to such a bad point that over the weekend she started to dance again. We all know how Theresa May dances. She felt her moves were a hit in Africa, but naturally, people left the room in an alarming and very fast rate this time round. We begged her not to dance anymore, and finally Team America flopped so badly over the weekend that they were forced to fly commercial back home from Paris. It wasn't so bad for the younger guys who got to spend time with their fans, but Tiger's anxiety went through the roof. All he wanted was some sleeping pills and a hand job, but none were offered from his seat near the bowels of the Boeing. That's all we got for you today. We will see you tomorrow, 6 a.m., bright and early. Get your day off to a good start. Enjoy the month of October. CliffCentral.com.